T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday.
Time for another edition of the Reardon Roundtable.
Friday.
Sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust. Now, Mark Reardon.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
All right, here we go. It's a Friday Reardon Roundtable heading into the weekend. The panel is assembled. On the weekend Reardon Roundtables, we serve margaritas in the green room, so they've been enjoying those.
Wait,
for the past.
Huh?
Oh, you guys. Well, if you guys were on time, you would have been able to enjoy those.
You're not referring to me.
So you drank all four of them, huh?
It's like the holiday schedule today. Usually Jane's here a little bit early. You weren't, so I was in panic mode. I thought,
wow.
I'm doing this thing on my own. And then
you could talk to yourself.
No problem. Plus, then when we thought Rainford wasn't here, Timmy and I were like, yeah, we can gang up on Jane. But let me introduce
you
the
guys.
It could just be the two of you, and you'd still lose the argument.
Amen, brother.
We see the tone has been set here.
All right. Your next golf game's on me.
Let's introduce the panel. Jane Duker is with us this afternoon. How are you?
Very good. We got a weekend. I wish, you know, there would be less rain, but I'm happy the Memorial Weekend.
Yeah, but is the Duker pool opening up this weekend?
It's already open.
Well, right. So that's perfect for...
I don't want rain.
Well, we'll be all right.
Not just a little bit of rain, I'm hoping?
We're going to get a little rain, I think. Jeff Rainford is here, the former, as I call him, the former chief of staff for the former mayor, Mayor Slay. Jeff, good to see you.
Great to be here.
And Tim Jones, the former speaker of the Missouri House, is with us this afternoon.
Great to be back, Mark. And yeah, I watch those rivers living out in the hinterlands. And yeah, boy, I'll tell you, every time it rains at all, they're going up 10, 12 feet. Then they go back down. Then they go back up. So...
Well, let's start.
We're gonna have a long summer here.
Let's start on the weather, and let's talk about Jeff City and flooding. You know, I'll tell you what, I covered yesterday on the show the tornado, and Brian Hosworth, who's a reporter from Columbia, Jeff City, I've known him for a long time, did a great job at painting the picture of the devastation. But I will tell you that I saw some pictures yesterday. I saw a lot more pictures today, and even after the discussions yesterday, I'm like, wow, that's a lot worse than I think I even had it in my mind, the devastation.
Bad.
And we are so lucky. You know, that, of course, was the anniversary of the Joplin tornado, basically on the same day.
Oh, my God, I went down there afterwards.
Do you remember how many, because I had to reference this, how many people died? You remember that?
I don't remember. 61? I just remember that there were...
161. It was 158,
really?
And then three more people sort of unrelated. So my point on that is, because that was just obviously devastating.
The worst.
We're so lucky that... Only three people.
I'm surprised.
I am too.
And that
you
was down
see.
In Golden City,
right.
which is
that
down where
yes, that's
Golden
right. Good
City
point.
Is down where my dad grew up, and my uncle Kenny, who's now DPS number two, director of public safety, up in Jeff City. And so I texted my uncle. I said, "Is everybody okay? Because I have a lot of family live in Mid Missouri, and we also have a lot of our government affairs team up there."
Tracy King
responded pretty quickly yesterday and said, "Everybody's fine. Amazingly, nobody died here in Jeff City." Three deaths down in Southwest Missouri.
Yeah, Golden City was the first one. That one rolled in
right.
before the Jeff City tornado. But I can't believe that
big
no one
tornado.
Got hurt in
the pictures,
Jeff City.
You see the pictures, how big it was?
Yes.
It was wide.
Oh, enormous. So Sunday, and on At Your Service here in KMOX, I'm going to have Lieutenant Governor Mike Kehoe is going to come on and talk about sort of more tornado recovery and flood, because that could be happening
yes.
at any moment. So they're not done yet. So there's still a lot. The Capitol was saved. They got... Some of the tarp around because they're redoing.
So when I first saw the picture of the Capitol, I thought, wow, it took the Capitol out. But yeah,
no.
they're redoing the dome
they
up
are.
There, right?
And so thankfully, all of that work is not going to be, was not destroyed.
I saw someone being interviewed today, basically in their home that doesn't exist. And they're just standing in front of the microwave and the stove. And, you know, the sun is shining and they're outside. And I also saw a picture. Gene Evans was on our panel last week. The
yep.
executive director of the Missouri Republican Party. Was it her office in Jeff City?
Yeah,
yes.
She posted
office.
A before and after picture. The before was a week ago when there were things all in order and stuff, artwork on the wall.
She
and she was sitting at her desk. And then the second picture was after the twister with you know, the office in shambles, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah, but and is, you're right, it wasn't as bad as Joplin, but it's also not as bad as Alabama. Alabama, it seems like every year there's 20, 30 people killed in a tornado going through there. So there are other places worse. I don't want to diminish the suffering that's going on, but I will say that if I worked in charge of things in St. Louis, and I don't even mean this flippantly, the one thing that we have that lots of other parts of the country don't have is we have large quantities of fresh water. And I've been following California, although they're out of drought now. They have drought. The West has drought. The Southeast has had drought. As an economic development thing, and again, I'm not diminishing people suffering from flooding and saying, oh, you know, but it is a fact that the rest of the country is drying up while we have copious amounts of water. We ought to figure out, you know, what to do with that.
You know, I don't consider that flippant at all. And it's funny because I think there are people that feel like water is going to be maybe the most coveted resources in the future. But is there, because I haven't followed technology or ways to maybe capitalize on that if you are in the Midwest, because you're going to have demand for that in the future in places that don't have the adequate supply.
And we have the best water in the world.
Well, and it also reminds us how many rivers we actually have here, and that translates into the work we're all supportive of on port authorities and things like that. You know, we are a major transportation hub because of air, rail, and water. And so with these floods, that's why our U.S. Senate delegation, congressional delegation in a bipartisan way are always working on rivers and how do you control the rivers. And I know they're always fighting with the Corps and, you know, you got to keep these rivers open, but you also have to let floodplains be floodplains, right? So you don't develop in them. So it's a complicated ecosystem balancing
But what if
act.
We, and I don't know what this would cause, but what if we started in some of those, maybe in the floodplains, I don't know where, but what if we started building lakes where the water only goes, you know, I'm not an Army Corps guy, but the water goes in there when there's flood. Because there was a time when the chief of staff to Senator Reid came to see us when they were in the middle of drought in Nevada. And he said the flood a few years ago in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, just the flood water would have been enough water for Nevada for like 50 years or something.
So well, reservoirs, so building reservoirs.
Something. I mean,
okay,
yeah.
But see, this is what I like about your approach, because as a climate change lukewarmer and not a denier, I think that the best way to, and whether this is climate change related or not, I don't know, but we should plan on ways to adapt, right? We have to make a plan for the future. And that, again, you got smart people. We put a man on the moon and, you know, do all these great, we got a rover on Mars right now. You would think that we'd be able to come up with ways to do this.
So think if we did that where we were able to take care of other parts of the country and their water, and out of it we got a lock and dam in the on our Mississippi riverfront turned into be more like a lake instead of the wild river it is, and the how we could develop it. You know, but the bottom line is that what they are saying, and I'm not a climate change, I do believe climate change is going to be the issue for my, you know, daughter's generation, but I also think it's too late and we are going to have to adapt. And I think that we ought to be thinking about what do we do with all this water?
Well, it's something we have that we could actually, you know, be an exporter of if we figured out how to harness it.
It is interesting, though, the way the swings back and forth, because I have a good friend of mine in Las Vegas, and he spends time in California as well. And we were talking about it because he's from here in St. Louis, so he's been tracking the weather and what happens here and also the blues. And we'll talk about that later this hour. But, you know, Jeff, to your point, they were in severe drought. Mm-hmm. And now they're, I think even this week, I haven't followed their weather as much as here, but they were expecting torrential rainfall.
Yeah, they're out of drought, but they're still, I read, there was a story in the paper recently, there are a million people there, even with all the rain, when they turn on the tap, sludge comes out. I mean, it's not sludge, but it's not drinkable water. And they are going to go, they're not going to always be in drought. They're going to be in between drought and have wildfires and then have rain and then back into drought. And it's the same with the Southeast. And, the, you know, and by the way, the same in parts of China and other places. I don't know how you're going to transport water because it's very heavy. But somebody ought to be thinking about it, because people can live without oil. Technically, they cannot live without water.
Yeah, I assume you can pipeline it like anything else. And it's amazing. For we all have the benefit. I know all of us get to travel, but some people don't. But the ecosystem between the Midwest and the West Coast are night and day, right? The desert Southwest, the aridness of California. We have incredibly different ecosystems in this country. I think sometimes we think the United States, oh, it's all just the same. Or there's trees and plants everywhere, and there's just not. Those are incredibly different ecosystems, and they develop over millions of years.
Remember Chinatown? Remember what Chinatown was about?
It was about water.
It was about gold. It wasn't about oil. It was about water rights.
What a great movie, too.
It was a great movie.
Unbelievable. I'm surprised. I actually saw a poster, and I didn't, you know, usually I'm on top of the movies, but I think they're making a remake of Gemini Man. Remember Gemini Man? But you would think Chinatown, although I'm always in the camp that says don't remake great movies like that, but that is a classic.
They're going to remake Chinatown?
No. My point is they've remade all these other things, and I'm wondering if that's somehow on the list.
It was really good.
Yeah, one of my favorite 70s movies. All right, so let's take a break. We're coming back. We're off and running here for a Memorial Day weekend edition of the Reardon Roundtable. Jane Duker, Jeff Rainford, and Tim Jones. And
the Reardon Roundtable, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust on KMOX.
All right, Reardon Roundtable for a Friday afternoon as we head into Memorial Day weekend. John Rooney is going to join me after 3 o'clock. We'll talk a little Cardinals baseball this afternoon, and then Jane's going to hang out, too. We got number one songs and some other fun stuff. We haven't talked about Game of Thrones either, so we'll touch on that just a little bit. The governor, Tim, I'll start with you on this one. Governor signed the abortion bill, the heartbeat bill. These, of course, have become pretty popular in southern states, also in Missouri, Ohio. Controversial, of course, all with the intent of getting a case before the United States Supreme Court. So it's interesting here, some of the dynamics in Missouri, because David Humphreys, who is a huge Republican fundraiser, is troubled by the nature of these bills, encouraging the governor to not sign it. He did. But I'm hearing even some behind the scenes talk about some ballot issue for next year.
Possibly.
So what's going on with that? Maybe some of the backstory on that. And do you think this was the right move for the governor to sign this bill?
David Humphreys is an interesting character. He was a donor of mine. I'll give that disclosure out there. I like David. I think he's great. He's definitely more of a libertarian, though. He's definitely more moderate on social issues. From what I've heard, his opinion is that they went too far on this particular bill. My understanding of the backstory on this was House Republicans fully expected Senate Democrats to force a compromise on this bill to put in the exceptions for rape and incest, but that never happened. The Senate Democrats were like, you guys want this bill? We're going to let you have it. We're all going to make it a political question next year. Humphreys is saying he's going to wade in on that. I don't know if it was a bluff to try to get the governor not to sign the bill. The governor went ahead and signed the bill. Governor Parsons' team and the Humphreys team do not get along. David Humphreys is not a donor or supporter of Mike Parson. This all goes back to the Greitens days and even before. And so it's one thing to say you're going to launch a ballot referendum on an issue like this. It's another thing to actually do it. I have some experience in this area with my day job. Over at First Rule, and I can tell you it's multi-millions of dollars, and he's got that, but it's also knowing how to do these are complicated proposals. I've heard also there's another major player who has said he will jump in on the social conservative side on this. It's a fellow here in the St. Louis region, and so this could be a battle royale. I still think Missouri is overwhelmingly a pro-life state. I think there's a lot of Democrats that if they can vote on pro-life or pro-abortion, they're going to vote pro-life if they can vote on that ballot question. So I think it'd be a mistake for Mr. Humphreys to waste his money on that.
I disagree. I think it gets everybody out to vote. You know, Missouri's probably not going to be very competitive. It may not be competitive in the presidential, depending on who the candidate is. So, you know, this would be good for both Democrats and Republicans. You'd have Democrats.
That's true.
You know, I mean, I think it's a get out the vote. That's my first reaction when I saw that. I said, oh, well, they're trying to get out the vote for both Republicans and Democrats because this will fire everybody up.
Gets everybody hired, that's for sure.
It gets everybody hired. It gets every, and especially if you have a counter proposal, which, you know, I don't even know why you would need a counter proposal. I mean, everybody would come out on this one. So, you know, I think it's definitely a get out the vote effort for both sides.
I think nationally it's going to hurt Republicans. I think that in the next election, this is a battle to see who's going to be the least most radical. And we obviously in the Democratic Party, especially on economic issues, have some people who are trying to be crazy radical. And I think that most Americans don't like abortion. Most Americans want limits on abortion, but they believe that in the case of rape, and in the case of saving the health of the life of the mother, that there should be exceptions. And so I think that if the Republicans decide nationally they're going to try to be radical on abortion, just like if we Democrats decide to be radical the other way, I think it's going to hurt them nationally.
Yep. Can I say something about the drafting of the bill? Because a lot of my House colleagues have I've talked to them about this. And Mark, if a person locally who would be a great guest for you sometime is Mary Elizabeth Coleman, who is a new state rep from South St. Louis County, Northern Jefferson County. She's articulate, bright, an attorney. this is one of her bailiwick issues. She told me that they drafted this bill to withstand constitutional muster. So she believes in her heart and her mind that this will survive any constitutional challenge.
And one of the reasons they drafted it, one of the reasons is tiered. You should explain. So in other words, if there's a flag on the 6 week or the, I guess it was eight
weeks. It's got severability within it.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Of the individual components.
Yes, it does. Of the timing in
of
which.
Of the timing.
The number of weeks in which you can have an abortion.
And I also will point out, three House Democrats in Missouri voted for this bill. Now, people say, well, that's only three. Well, the caucus is down to 40-some odd, so it's almost 10% of the Democratic caucus voted for this, showing that they each of those three people represent 40,000 voters. So there are a lot of Democratic voters in Missouri, especially south of 44, who are still very pro-life. So I think it survives, no matter what.
In my entire existence talking about these issues, decades now, abortion, being someone who is pro-life, for personal reasons, I've explained it before, this is the first piece of pro-life legislation that I have had issues with, ever, because I do think it's a bit of an overreach. Now,
well, and I also think
the conventional, hang on. The conventional wisdom is, going back to your point, Jeff, that, and Jane, you made this point too, and I guess I would have even thought, well, look, this is not going to be good for Republicans because of women and because of younger voters. But there was a poll this week that found that 55% of those polled, this was younger voters, that a Georgia 6 week abortion ban was either just right or too lenient, broken down by age group. 18 to 34 were most likely to say the bans didn't go far enough. That's shocking. Now, that's just one poll, and I don't know about the biases in that poll relating to the way that the question was asked. Those are always legitimate questions. But sometimes, you know, it's a little unwise to assume that voters will head in one direction over the other. I think you're right. I think most people in this country would support limits on abortion.
If you had reasonable limits on abortion in this country, whether we Democrats liked it or not, that would be okay. But when you go too far, it's not just that they go too far on abortion. It's that, you know, that they're willing to radicalize politics in America, and it scares some people.
Even well, people so does who the infanticide bills on
exactly. No,
no, no. That's one of the reasons these bills have popped up,
right,
because of the reaction to this stuff in January and February.
And it's all reactionary, and this is the thing. And while I think they did have different tiers for
they
the
do.
Timing, it doesn't take care of the fact that there isn't an exception for rape and incest.
You're free to do whatever you want for the first 2 months. So the lack of exceptions only kick in. It's not a total. Let's remember, this bill is not Alabama's bill or even Georgia's bill. This bill is wide open for the first 8 weeks. You can get an abortion for any reason whatsoever during those first 2 months.
But most people don't know that they're pregnant until that period, correct?
That's the point.
Yes, but I would assume if you are the victim of a criminal assault, you're going to seek something, right? You're going to go to the authorities. You're going to go to the hospital, right? You're not just going to sit around and do nothing, I would think.
In theory. But
well, yeah,
in theory.
Victims of incest, that's a far more complicated situation because that usually...
Well, yeah. Incest is different than rape, right?
Well, so, but even rape can traumatize people. And so I don't think you should necessarily assume that. And I don't... And first of all, I don't know why you want to take it away for rape and incest victims on any...
Well, but I understand the reasoning behind that because it actually is a more consistent position if you're pro-life.
Well, you either believe... And that's what it comes down to, right? There are many folks who say, when does life begin? And why are we punishing? If you believe it begins at conception, then why are you punishing that innocent life by saying it doesn't
have
a say?
Well, but if you believe it that life begins at the conception, you shouldn't have 8 weeks of freedom.
Well, you know, that's an argument. And so, but see, the Missouri folks, they understand that. And that's why they didn't want a bill that was going to have to get challenged by the court. So they left the 8 weeks in there. Now, I don't know where this all comes down. I think Jeff said it. Or maybe you did, Jane, that, you know, we largely were going to be neglected in this next election because we were Trump plus 20. So maybe now we get some attention for this. And maybe it puts the issue to rest. If there is a ballot proposal, then I guess each side's going to find out if Missouri at the current state and time is a strong pro-life state or wants to still maintain some of the exceptions.
I think this initiative petition process is abused in Missouri, but would that have to be a constitutional amendment?
I think it would because there was an emergency clause on this bill. So I don't think you can challenge it by a referendum like the right to work was done last year. I think that ship has sailed. So I think if Mr. Humphreys or anybody else wants to challenge this, yes, I think they're going to have to draft and submit and run a constitutional amendment.
This bill is not going to get, that's why I talk nationally. I mean, this, you know, we're a settled state. This bill is not going to get overturned in Missouri. And if it's not going to get overturned by the Supreme Court, it's not going to get overturned. It's not going to get overturned by referendum. He's bluffing, I believe. But I do believe nationally this is an issue. And I also say that, now this is me personally, I don't know what polls say. So when Republicans and others say they're pro-life, I kind of respect the front half of that, the abortion side, because I think that that's a complicated issue and there should not be abortions in every circumstance. But you know what? Republicans and conservatives need to be consistently pro-life after the child is born, including low-income children who need medical care, whose moms need medical care, who need education, those sorts of things. Be consistent and be pro-life before the baby is born and be pro-life equally as passionately after the baby is born. Then you would be consistent and I would be like, hey, they are really pro-life.
I think you got some Missouri Republican legislators that are that consistent.
All right, we got to take a break. We're coming back. It's the Reardon Roundtable Friday afternoon, Memorial Day weekend. Back with more, much more coming up.
The Reardon Roundtable, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Reardon Roundtable, Jane Duker, Jeff Rainford with us this afternoon, former House Speaker Tim Jones. Let's just briefly, and I'm not going to go to any panelists in particular, on the legislative session, we talked about a little bit a week ago, Jane, just as the wrap-up. One of the other things that kind of came out of that was this motorcycle helmet law that I've been talking about a little bit this week. Is there anything else that you can, a week later, out of this legislative session, outside of the heartbeat bill and this helmet bill, and of course the constitutional requirement to balance the budget, that is significant from Jeff City?
Well, yeah.
Wait, hang on, sorry. I like to have your mic off, typically.
Yeah, right. It's automatically off. The default
sorry.
Is off.
I got to apologize to the listeners. I had
you
to turn it back
losing,
on.
So
but go ahead.
Turn it back on. No, I mean, I think it was, other than heartbeat and some of the squabbles between the Republicans, there were the conservative caucus fighting with their own. I mean, it was relatively uneventful. The budget got done like it always gets done every year. I mean, we do have a balanced budget amendment. I know everybody touts, oh, we passed a balanced budget. Well, you have to.
You have to, right.
And that's good. I mean, I'm for that. You know, I wish we did get some transportation done. But not near where we need to be. Nothing on education, nothing. I mean, I think it's more eventful for what we didn't get than what we did get. So
we did get one thing, and Tim can comment on this. It'll probably be the last one of its kind ever, but they got $60 million for the Scott Trade Center. No, I'm sorry, the Enterprise Center. Mm-hmm. The state's going to make an investment out of the general fund and make pay for the second phase of the improvements for the Enterprise Center, which will, you know, put us again. I remember the old days when we were getting Final Fours and we were getting the Olympic ice trials and all kinds of major events that not only were fun to see in our city, but brought in a lot of money. Those days are going to come back. And
well, we've already seen, I mean, we got the gymnastics event and also the NHL All-Star game.
Yeah, no, it's already working. And so, Tim, I guess we probably don't see many more of those coming down the pike, but somehow we got that done this session.
Yeah, and look.
And it was quiet, too.
And on personalities, and this is a little inside baseball, but let's remember, go back to January when we started, we had brand new leadership at the top of all three components of the General Assembly and the governor's office, right? We had a brand new governor for his first session, and we had a brand new speaker pro tem and a brand new speaker in the House. These people had never worked with each other at that level. And you have to say, Governor Parson had a pretty good session. That GM incentive package popped up at the very end, at the 12th hour, and there was a lot of consternation about that. I think the conservative caucus did get some concessions that are buried in the bill and in some other bills people didn't see right away, and I'll talk about them in a second. But I did think the governor had a really good set compared to the theatrics of last year and the drama and the extracurricular activities.
And by the way, there's a reference to that
this week because he's back.
Yes, there is.
Governor Greitens apparently going back into the Navy and then writing a book is what we're hearing as well.
I feel a little differently about that than the pundits do. I don't think that when you make those sorts of mistakes, it should be a life sentence and that we should ban you to the desert forever. Now, does he have to, like lots of other people who've made major screw-ups, does he have to prove that he now has some humility, that he gets that the rest of us aren't like his pawns, you know, for his own advancing his career. Yeah, he's got to do things a lot differently. But I think people should be allowed, especially, you know, considering he didn't kill anybody.
Americans love
I think he should
story.
Be allowed to earn his way back into society.
Yeah, but does that mean, I completely agree with you, but does that mean, and look, the governor was a friend of mine, I say was, because I haven't talked to him since last 4th of July when we had communication. I'm a little disappointed in that. So I can't tell you what he's up to because we've lost contact. But that's different because some people still think he may want to run for public office, whether it's statewide or running for the U.S. Senate. I think that's a bit of an overreach.
Yeah, Mark, here's what he's going to do. He's going to go overseas and do some soul searching, apparently. And Jeff's right. Is he going to have the one thing he definitely lacked was any sort of humility about any of this or remorse? You know, is it going to be a true redemption story or not? I think I think saying he's running in 2022 is getting a little ahead of ourselves, but he's a very ambitious guy.
Wait a
though.
Minute here. I have to say on the other side, I agree that people are entitled to redemption. But, the whole smacking of a woman is not something I think that you can sort of redeem yourself unless you really come clean that you can't hit women.
Yeah, will he have
any
remorse?
That's a detail. How you get redemption does matter. If he's already got it in his head that I've got another plan to run in 2022, then he's not seeking redemption. He's just trying to, you know, do what he was doing before. But if he's truly sorry, if he truly understands that, you know, he needs to keep both feet on the wall,
you watch Big Little Lies, Jane? Have you seen that?
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
This is only for a Big Little Lies crowd. I just started watching it. Nicole
Kidman, season one or second?
Nicole Kidman's character, there's something that happens with her character and her husband that involves physical abuse, right?
Correct.
That results in sex. Now, I told you from the beginning, I don't know the whole story, but I do think there's a difference between beating up on women and having something that takes place along the lines of 50 Shades of Grey. I don't know what the truth is. Obviously, she did not want to, in that case, be hit. I get that. But we don't know if some of that was part of the sex play. We simply don't know that.
This is the deal. She spoke under oath. He didn't. So part of your redemption is you need to say your story.
No, he's going to have to. He's going to have to be a different person.
And until he decides he's going to tell the truth, her story's the only one that's under oath.
Well, what if he names the book he's writing 50 Shades of Greitens?
There you go. Can I go back to something?
I think people will read it.
Back to something a little
By the way. Well, no, I guess I shouldn't say that.
A little less racy.
No, please do.
Think, Jeff.
What I want to say is the governor set an agenda this year in the House and Senate complete. I'll disagree with Jane. I'm not going to say it was the best session ever, but they got some significant
things across the finish line
that heretofore had not been done.
Don't you do a radio show on the other side of the building?
Yeah, I do, right?
Let me give you a little radio hint. When we're talking about sex and whips and chains, don't bring it back to politics because people don't want to hear that.
I was blushing
sex
over here.
Sex always top, Tim. Come on, man.
50 Shades of Greitens. That's where we were.
All right, thank you. I'm just trying to help you out. We got to take another break. We're back with more in a moment.
The Reardon Roundtable, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Fourth segment. Can't do math. Never have been able to do math. So this is the final segment of the Reardon Roundtable. It's a holiday weekend.
Just keep talking.
Let's for 2 seconds cover the exit of British Prime Minister Theresa May. Okay, there. We've covered that. Now let's go on to Donald Trump.
Yeah, let's get back to sex.
Well done.
Right. Please. That kind of comparison with Theresa May, though, I'm going to stay away from. We'll talk about impeachment. Here's what Nancy Pelosi said about the president.
He's a master of distraction. We will all agree on that. That's something he does well, to distract from problems that he has. He tries to change the subject. And while he tried to say it's because I said cover up, we've been saying cover up for a while. And our 9 o'clock meeting was a meeting we have anyway, so it had nothing to do with him. But I think what really got to him was these court cases and the fact that a House Democratic caucus is not on a path to impeachment. And that's where he wants us to be.
So one of my insiders, Doug High, who's an analyst, can't even say the word.
Why do I do this? A lot of problems
he
today.
He talks on CNN. Doug agreed with that sentiment. And he thinks that there are positives. Tim, I'll start with you on this one. Weigh in. Do you think that may be what the president's up to? Because he sees political gain from that.
I think the world is upside down. I think the Democratic speaker does not want to impeach, and the Republican president wants to be impeached.
Oh my gosh.
I agree.
And the reason for that is you go back to Clinton when he was impeached, and that was a disaster for the Republicans. I actually do agree with the House Speaker on this one. I think we beat him at the election. I think we are not a third world country. We do not depose our leaders except under extraordinary circumstances. We beat them in elections. I think even people who, like me, who don't like Trump, but we're not so far out there that we hate him, we want to beat him. I think, one, it would help him, and two, I don't think it's good for our country, because then if, you know, are we going to start having impeachment every 4 years? So I think that she is right on this. I think he knows that, senses that, also has obviously the firewall in the Senate, so he knows he's not going to get kicked out of office. It's just he's so ham-handed about it. I don't know if that ends up, you know, being a benefit for him from when it's so obvious that he's trying to goad them into doing it.
You know, when I made my predictions that Donald Trump, you know, would be impeached, I never dreamed that that he would himself want it. So, I mean,
so
you know,
weird.
What? I could never even get that.
See,
but
he
you
beat
know
you
what?
At your own game, Jane. I mean, beat you at your own game.
You're right. I cannot put myself in his warped place, but
you'd be a good advisor to him.
Right. I mean, I think that he would love to be the victim. He would love to say, you know, because he doesn't have an enemy, because when you're in power, it's tough to blame other people. But if they're impeaching you, then you can blame them.
All right, can I just say about poor Nancy Pelosi? Mm-hmm. She sounds like she's three martinis in every time they interview her. And I don't
know if it was martinis.
I don't
it was the dentures slipping
well,
or something
I don't know.
There.
And I don't blame her, because she's got this chaos caucus, right, that's making her life hell. And Jeff alluded to it. We're having a big love fest here today. You know, it's great that the speaker actually has some sense. Speakers always do. And she's so intelligent. She's a student of history. She was there during the Clinton years, and she saw what a disaster it was for Republicans. She knows it'd be a disaster for them. And it's such a and then you got Maxine Waters and the rest of the crowd. It's such a constitutional crisis, Mark, that they're going on vacation next week.
Right,
they're
right,
leaving
yeah.
town. They don't have time to impeach him because, again, as Rainford said, by the time the Senate gets this, they'd acquit him anyway, but they don't even have time to get it to him. It's all political
stunt.
Okay,
but here's what sucks, because I think that this is all accurate, but I didn't really hold out hope, but I guess just a small part of me thought they could get something done on infrastructure.
I think it's going to hurt him when he says that I'm not going to basically do any work as long as they're investigating me. I don't think the American people want to hear that he's going to say, I'm just not working
the American
anymore
people,
because they're picking on me.
Because the American people are done with the investigations. Get over your collusion delusion. It was
but
a
that
hoax.
Doesn't
it's
mean
over.
You don't, well, then fine. Let the people decide.
Yeah,
I actually
don't believe what's going to beat him is what's in the Mueller report. I think what's going to beat him is him.
Right.
He's
exactly.
going to beat himself, his personality, what he's doing, the coarseness, the way he treats people. This is the leader of the free world.
But
and,
that hasn't
and
changed
a majority,
since 2016.
No, I'm talking about at the election.
Changed.
I'm talking about at the election.
Right.
What's going to beat him at the election is not Mueller. It's going
right.
to be
yeah,
Trump.
That may be the what, but the who's the who. I don't see anybody in the clown car that's going to beat him on the
other
side.
We'll talk about that in a second. But on the what, Jeff, didn't people know about, I mean, they certainly know that when it was grabbed by the P word.
They thought he would be able to get stuff done, and he hasn't.
Well, first of all, remember, he barely won. He did not win in a landslide. So he's got to like build his base, and he is seemingly has shrunk his base, not by a lot, but by enough that he's not at 50%.
Well, there were some interesting,
45,
you know, poll
and that's
numbers.
What Obama was at this time.
Poll numbers at this point are somewhat questionable.
No, it's not the poll.
No,
it's him, the person.
I know. But my point was going to be, I looked at something this week about Joe Biden in Pennsylvania, and where he's getting some support comes directly from the people who voted for Donald Trump in that state. So that is a problem area. We got to save the best for last year. We were talking, not to jinx things during the break, but I we're just going to have to do it because everyone's sort of talking out loud about these things. And, you know, superstitions aside, if this city gets to throw a parade in 2 weeks, you know, I was talking about I was at the parade in 82 and I was a senior in high school at Parkway West. We have a great picture in my 1983 yearbook of all of us who skipped school in front of the Stan Musial statue. 2006, I thought, was a great parade. 2011, too, but 2006, it had been so long. But the parade, if they win this Stanley Cup final, I can't even imagine what this whole city and region will be like.
I'll just speak personally. So I've been a fan since I grew up here, and I loved sports as a little kid. I've been a fan since it got started. From the very beginning, not counting family stuff, right? But outside of family stuff, if they win the Stanley Cup, it may be the best thing that's ever happened in my life. It will be unbelievable how great it will be, because we've been waiting so dang long for it.
I had goldfish named Barkley and Bobby when I was a child. I mean,
and remember when they went up into the stands in Philadelphia and the whole nine yards.
I mean, it's like this is you just don't even contemplate that it could happen. You know, we get used to the Cardinals, and so that's a whole. This is like. Cubs, Red Sox, like, territory.
Mark, and I can't say this about many things because, as my younger daughter points out, I have salt and pepper in my hair now. But I was not alive when the Blues went to the last Stanley Cup. So this is my lifetime. It's nearly 50 years. I'm a lifelong hockey fan. I have such good memories of driving around in mom and dad's car. My mother would listen to on the AM radio, you know, the Blues back in the day.
I played
hockey for 6 years on an adult men's rec league. I loved it. I love the sport. I love the game. I would love this town to win the cup.
My fondest memories, and I said this on the air yesterday, so I got away from hockey for a little while because when you live in a city, it's just like here, there's no NBA franchise. When I was in Milwaukee, hockey was off the radar.
Right.
But in the 80s, and when I was in high school and at Mizzou in particular, I loved going to those games at the old Checker Dome and the rivalries in the 80s with the Blackhawks, and then when you have the Hall & Oates period. I mean, all the history is great, and it's just stunning to me that this has not happened since, mm-hmm. you know, the expansion teams in 1969, 1970.
Well, a little bit of a challenge for them is they've never really been terrible. They've always been good but not great, and they haven't really ever gotten great draft choices. And then to give some kudos to Tom Stillman and his group, we always haven't had stable ownership either. We've had some very unstable ownership. And you take those two, you know, things into effect, and you know, it's kind of like what things went haywire with the Red Sox.
Not going to be easy, and mm-hmm. this is a really good Boston team. I don't know the whole talk of a team of destiny. I do think this team is different. We've seen it all along the way. We've certainly seen it in these three series, and it as much fun as this is going to be, especially in the end, if it results in a trophy and a parade, boy, you know, I would ordinarily say, well, at least we got the Cardinals. But we're going to spend about as much time on the Cardinals as we did on Theresa May, all right?
Given the circumstances. By the way, thank you for moving the Blues over.
Well, yeah, for people who don't know what Jeff is talking now, contractually, people get confused by this. Look, right. It's set up in the contracts this way. You guys, we got two lawyers in the room here. Mm-hmm. But the deal is the Cardinals take precedent over the Blues for every broadcast unless they go to the Stanley Cup Final. And now that that's happening, the Blues will be on KMOX, the Cardinals on Y98. There's no, you know, the teams don't have a bunch of disagreements. It's just the way that the, you know, the contracts are set up. And the irony, I guess, supposedly is, and Dan Caesar wrote about this in the paper this morning, is the Blues are leaving for another station. It's an understandable circumstance. It's why we don't have Mizzou on KMOX mm-hmm. either, because there are too many conflicts with games. So you'd always have to shift them to the other properties. And it would be different if we had an all-sports station here in our building with the five stations. They probably wouldn't be leaving, but it is what it is. But, you know, the Cardinals came back to KMOX the year that they won the World Series, so maybe this is just kind of karma on the other side.
They win it this year, then you had them the right year.
That's right. And what a testament to, you know, we criticize St. Louis a lot, and sometimes deservedly so, but what a testament to these two franchises, the Cardinals and the Blues. They're so well run, right? And I think that's why, going back to the legislature, they actually were able to get that reinvestment in the team, because it's a heck of a product that is consistent. It's never gone anywhere. It's been here for almost half a century.
All right, we got to wrap it up here, but for my panel today, we have Fritz's Blues Creets. Listen to this. Original recipe, vanilla frozen custard with special blue raspberry flavor, just in time for the cup. Let's go Blues. They have the Blueberry Hill Sundae. That's vanilla frozen custard with blueberries and marshmallow sauce. Jim, we got to try one of those.
Yes.
And, you know, Debbie Fritz and the gang over there, they can't have enough blue this week. And the Rocky Road Sundae also, that's chocolate with delicious marshmallow and almonds. I think I'm going to have to grab one because my mom and dad are in town from Chicago. My dad loves the Fritz's frozen custards. Jane's going to hang out for the next hour. We'll talk to John Rooney after the top of the order. I'm thinking baseball there. Hour. Tim Jones, great to see you.
Good to see you, Mark.
Just remember a little tip for the radio show.
Yeah, all sex all the time. That's
over
what Mark Harrington told me.
Rainford.
Okay, wow.
Jeff, I'll see you on the golf course soon. We got Rainford. I've been playing golf.
Have fun, Jane.
We'll see you on the course.
Hit
soon.
Them long
Take
and straight.
Care. All right, there you go.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.